so much for joining the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Ji Suki, excited to be with you, and a perfect day for Terry Savage to be in studio. The Dow is surging, and we're going to find out from Terry what's behind this rally in the middle of a global health crisis.
Can't we just play that song, Money, 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 Money?
You know, oh, you missed the song. I wasn't sure.
I missed the song.
I didn't know how people, you know.
That's what's going. This is amazing. There is going to be terrible economic fallout unless they get this contained very quickly. They say they are. They're building hospitals overnight. They're going to, you know, put them. But the problem is that in China, there are a lot of companies that are overextended. Right now, all the factory workers are up in the hinterlands because this was the new year, the long Christmas break sort of that they get, and they're not being allowed to come back down from those provinces back to the factory. So many factories are shut down. There's a contagion fear, so you've got Apple closing all its stores, mm-hmm. et cetera. And not to mention the potential of it going worldwide and the impact on airlines, et cetera. You have all heard that. In the middle of all this last night, China said, literally, we are pumping ₩1 trillion into the economy. We're going to cut reserve requirements for the banks. We're going to make interest rates go down. We're going to stimulate our economy. Well, I don't know where all that money went except into the stock market here in the U.S. And that's what's put this market and Tesla stock, as Orion was talking about, into the stratosphere. I know I've seen this before. I know I've seen companies that had promise but no actual, in those days, profits. Tesla does have profits, going stratospherically high. I think it was called the dot-com bubble.
Yes.
I've seen markets be totally irrational. Just like when you're in chemistry class, they tell you that a fire needs three things. It needs, like, this is all I remember from chemistry, it needs oxygen, it needs fuel, you know, a combustible material, and heat to the kindling point. You have a fire. And the way you put a fire out is you smother it. That's a principle of fire extinguishers. Well, right now, nothing is smothering this fire in the markets. In fact, they're pouring more fuel into it by liquidity around the world. Well, all the central banks in the past have poured money in to keep the Europe from going down the tubes. The United States did its part, and the Fed has been adding to the liquidity in the last 4 months, buying all the IOUs from the Treasury as we overspend. And now China's pouring money in. So where is it all going? It's going in the stock market, and the stock market's going up.
And that's what's behind the rally. Wow. Terry Savage, she's an expert on personal finance, the economy, and the markets. She's going to be answering your questions and also taking your text questions. 312-981-7200. Be sure to text and call in for Terry Savage. G here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, joined by Terry Savage. Just wanted to remind you, you know, that she was a founding member and the first woman of the Chicago Board Options Exchange. And she
it's
also
before Dr. J's time, I like to remind
absolutely,
him.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yes.
But listen, I don't put myself in his league as a trader. I'm much better as an investor long term.
Well, you started
Dr.
out
J's.
As a stock trader, though, didn't
I
you?
I did. I found out how tough that business is.
And she has columns that are syndicated by the Tribune Content Agency. And you said your articles can be found
in the Monday Tribune here.
Awesome.
But also terrysavage.com, where, by the way, if you don't get your question answered, I just stay up late at night after I'm on the air early in the week with you guys and try and answer your questions.
Yeah, just
but
because you're so kind.
There's a link that says Ask Terry.
Yeah.
It keeps me on my toes, and I like hearing from you.
Well, yes, and you just don't have enough to do. Yeah, right. Okay, this is a text question. I have an income of approximately $145,000 annually. Can I open and contribute to a traditional IRA?
Well, if you're not covered by a plan, by a 401k at work, you can open and deduct a traditional IRA. If not, you could still open an IRA. And I would suggest you make it a Roth IRA that won't be deductible, or you could open a traditional IRA. However, it won't be deductible. So a lot depends on your coverage at your company plan. But if you are covered by a company plan, the odds are they're going to match some or all of your contribution. So maximize your company plan contribution first. At least get the full match. They should have a low expense choice of funds for you to invest in. So the first thing is do that first.
312-981-7200. Terry, always what's happens is we get the calls in just as about we're about to wind up the segment, so go ahead and call in now because Terry does love to hear from you live. Here's another text question. Where is the best place to borrow for college? And this is from the 630.
The best place to borrow from for college is not to borrow. I don't mean to be snotty about this, but the best thing to do for college is to save up your money from the time the child's a baby in a 529 college savings plan. We're in Illinois. Right Start Savings gets good ratings. You get a deduction of up to $10,000 on your tax return, your Illinois tax return for contributions. Okay, I hear you saying, okay, I wish I had known that 20 years ago or 17 years ago, but my child is a junior or senior. The first thing you do is fill out the FAFSA form. Go to findaid.org. Let me give you a website that will epitomize this one. There's also articles at terrysavage.com. And my new book, a new edition of The Savage Truth on Money, has a whole chapter on this. I really think it's important that you understand the long-term costs. So the first thing is federal financial aid for which you have to qualify. It may be subsidized, that is, interest doesn't accrue when you're in school, but that interest really hits you. The rate remains unchanged for the rest of your life till you pay it off, and it's a huge burden on students. But that's federal financial aid. You know, you want to look for free money. Scholarships.com is a place to go. Ask your school financial aid office. But what I really encourage you to do, I want to remember to tell you what not to do, but what I really want to encourage you to do is start talking with your child when they're a freshman in high school. Say you, and my parents said this to me 100 years ago. Hey, you know, we can't afford that. You have two younger brothers. So if you will set your kids up with expectations that A, they could live at home for 2 years and go to community college, or B, an in-state school would make a big difference, or C, it might be a school where they could get financial aid. Think about if you go to scholarships.com when they're a freshman, they can learn about the essays they could write, things they could do. Now, here's what not to do. Number one not to do is do not, if at all possible, take out a Parent PLUS loan. Not only is the rate much higher, well, over 6% now, but there's a 4% distribution fee. It's the Parent PLUS loans are the worst deal. You practically never get them refinanced later in life. Do not do a Parent PLUS loan. So the final remaining thing is, what about a home equity loan or refinancing my mortgage? The problem is, under the new tax laws, though, I don't know how they'll figure this out. If you take money out to pay for college and did a refi, which rates are low now, the interest is not deductible unless you took money out to improve your home. I don't know how they're going to track you down, but if you can refinance your mortgage at a low rate, that would probably be the way to go, even if a portion of the interest wouldn't be deductible.
Terry, let's take a caller. This is Jody, and she has a question about her 401k. Hi, Jody. What's your question for Terry?
Hi, Terry. I have a 401k from a job I was let go of, and I need to do something with it. I don't want to take it out, and I've heard I can leave it where it is, but then I won't be able to make changes to it, like where to put things, or I've heard I should take it out and put it into an IRA, so I'm just looking for some direction.
Okay. Repeat that for me, Chica.
So, basically, she's just been let go from a job, unfortunately, and she doesn't know whether to leave her 401k there and exactly what to do with it. Right, Jody?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there's no reason immediately, Jody, to move the 401k. They have a good choice of investments if they're low cost. You've got enough to worry about right now at this point without thinking about moving your 401k. At some point, you might want to roll it over when you're closer to retirement, which I hope is way down the road, because there'll be a better choice of investments. But if it's a good company plan, leave it there and focus on getting a job now with benefits. Gee, if you had to be laid off, this is the best time in the last 25 years to be laid off, because everybody is searching for good, talented workers. So get very aggressive about finding a job now and then signing up for the new benefit plans.
Well, good luck, Jody.
I will do that.
I think that's a positive message, Terry. That was a good
that's
a good note to end that call on. Thanks, Jody, so much for your call. Let's go to Sandy. Sandy has a question about her pension. This is G here. Sandy, go ahead and ask your question for Terry.
Hi, Terry. I have been out away from the company for 20 years. I left my pension plan and my IRA there, and it's been multiplying really nicely. It's in a target 2020 because I'm going to retire officially. And the company that's called Empower is taking care of, I guess, different pension plans and companies. But they want me to take my money out of Deluxe Check Printers, which is where I used to work, and put it in their Empower pension plan and IRA, and he was talking about a couple other things.
I bet he's going to make some money off of you.
He just called while I was waiting for you. Yes.
Okay, look, first of all, you probably have a 401k there. as well as a pension? Is that it?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
You need to contact your former employer. How long have you not been working for them?
18 years.
Oh, 18 years. It's just, have you talked to them in that 18 years to make sure it's alive and well? Are you getting statements?
Oh, yeah. I get statements and everything, and I get, it's alive and well. It's been multiplying really nicely.
Okay. Well, you know what? That's not genius or the fact that they're so good or that they have such a good plan.
Yeah.
It's the fact we've had a really humongous bull market. Instead of, at this stage, how close are you to deciding you're retired and starting to need to withdraw?
I turned 65. I turned 66 in this past December. But I'm still handling everything. I used to have a company, and folded it up. So,
all right. So here's the thing. You want to look and see how you're invested inside their 401k. Those 401k plans are mostly set up for people who are younger and can face the ups and downs of the stock market and accumulate. But if I were you, if you're going to roll, you don't want to be all exposed to the stock market, see if they have something conservative, like a stable value fund inside the 401k. They may have that. But I don't think you need anyone to help you roll it over. If you think you have too much at risk in the market, call Fidelity or Vanguard and put half in a money market fund and half in their equity income fund, something conservative at this stage of your life. Near retirement, you can roll it directly to them without anyone's help. Your pension you probably can't roll, and you should leave it there. And then don't take Social Security for as long as you possibly can. Don't aim for your full retirement age. Wait as long as you can. That's like an 8% increase in your money every month.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for your call. We're going to do a couple of rapid-fire text questions because we're running out of time, Terry. I have approximately $60,000 in a money market. Someone's telling me to put that money into an annuity so I may have a monthly income from it. What is your suggestion? This is from the 352.
You are making that someone rich. You don't have enough time, but please just spend $15 or whatever it is on Amazon for the new edition of The Savage Truth on Money. Read the annuity chapter. I have nothing against annuities. I own a few, but you don't have any idea how tied up your money is, how the withdrawals are at their discretion based on things that you have no control over. So don't do that.
This is from the 815. Will we ever see saving rates go up? CDs are dropping. If you aren't in the stock market, what can you do?
It's called chicken money. And the mantra is, I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as the return of my money. Go to terrysavage.com and go click on the article called Treasury Bills. You'll see that you can today earn about 1.5%. More than that, you're taking a little risk. You need to have some liquid chicken money. You can't risk it to get more money.
And this is the last one from the 773. I just inherited $250,000. I'm clueless what to do. I make $50,000 a year. Should I quit my job? I'm 62.
No. Post that question on my Ask Terry, because I'd like to point you in the right direction. And a lot of that depends on where you are, what you own, what your plans are. But do not quit your job. Do not quit your job. Do not quit your job. Let's keep that safe, okay? You do not have to do anything right now. For the moment, because we're running out of time, leave that money in the bank and post the question at terrysavage.com on Ask Terry, and I'll point you in a more specific direction. Put a little bit in there about where you stand in life other than that.
Never enough time, but you can ask your questions directly to Terry on her website, terrysavage.com, and there's a ton of resources there as well. And we look forward to seeing you next week, Terry.
Love doing it.
Wintrust Business Lunch with G here. Do you own a company? Have you been wondering where you might be able to save in the company, especially when it comes to cost reduction in utility bills, telecommunication, maybe some of your merchant and vendor accounts, maybe even taking a look at those waste bills as well. We have Aaron Stahl here. He's the president and CEO of P3 Cost Analysts, and he's not from around here. He's not from around Chicago, but he does a lot of business in the Chicago area. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thanks, G. Appreciate you having me on.
Okay, so what does a cost reduction company do?
Sure thing. So we're a nationwide cost reduction consulting franchise. That means we help our business clients and local government clients around the country save money on their telecom, utility, waste expenses, as well as merchant processing and copier expenses. And the easiest way to think about what we do is forensic accounting. We look at our clients' invoices and look for errors, overcharges, opportunities for reduction, and then apply over 150 years of expertise on our clients' behalf to help them save money. And then if we're able to help them save money, we share in the savings with them. If we can't, there is no fee.
As I mentioned, you do a lot of business in the Chicagoland area, but where are you based?
Our headquarters out of Northwest Arkansas, and then we also have an office in Greensboro, North Carolina.
And you also have a franchise.
Sure, franchisee. Yeah, we have a franchisee here in Chicago, and we've just added 9 new franchisees and are expecting to grow quite a bit this year. We've got a lot of room for expansion in Chicago. We've been working around here for a long time.
So, Aaron, before we talk more in depth about what your company does, can we name some of the big companies that you work with that people will recognize?
Sure. I mean, we've worked with branches of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, a lot of big restaurant groups around the country like Sonic, Papa John's, but really anybody is a client of ours, a potential client of ours. We worked with manufacturing, school systems, auto dealerships, local governments, cities, so, counties, anybody's a potential client.
So you can be a small business or you can be on a Fortune 500 list.
That's correct. I mean, we usually say our target market's anybody above the mom and pop and below the Fortune 500. And that's just because that middle market's, and that's a big middle market. It's easier to get a decision made. So we see a lot better ROI there as far as getting our services engaged.
So how does it work? I just would assume that business owners would know and recognize when they were being overcharged.
You would think that. These are just highly complex industries. I mean, the telecom industry, utility industry, waste industry, it really takes a lot of expertise to identify these errors and overcharges and bring those savings to our clients' bottom line. So we go into clients all the time, and they really think that there's no opportunity to save them money, and we get in there and prove it that 9 out of 10 times that we go to work for somebody, we're able to find them savings.
So how does this work exactly? You go in, you start looking at the bills?
Yeah, absolutely. So we walk into the CFO or CEO owner's office and we say, hey, we can use our expertise in these industries to help you save money, provided they engage with us. Then we go to work on their behalf. We look at their invoices, start looking for opportunities. And if we're able to find something, we bring it back to the client and we say, hey, here's what we found. And then provided they agree to it, we implement it on their behalf. And only after they're saving money do we begin to share in those savings with them.
Is your approach the same regardless of the size of the business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the industry, for that matter. For us, we're kind of industry agnostic, and the size of the company really doesn't matter. We're just looking at waste, telecom, and utility bills, and the process is really the same for us no matter what.
Can you give me an example of how you might save someone on, you know, one area?
Sure. I mean, one example would be a telecom client we had. It was a school system, and they were overpaying on a particular fee. Somebody at the telecom company had just accidentally fat-fingered the fee, and they were paying many multiples of the going rate. And you wouldn't have known it just by looking at the invoice. So our auditors reviewed that account, identified the error, and then we worked for a long time to get that back to on our client's behalf. Because believe it or not, when you find a big refund, the client or the companies aren't always just willing to give it back. So we had to escalate that one up all the way up to the C-suite at this particular telecom vendor, but ended up getting about $150,000 back for the client. So that's one example. An example on the utility side might be a meter error or a stuck meter, and then that can trigger a demand ratchet, which bills the client at an elevated rate for the remainder of the year, which is done erroneously. So there's all sorts of little things. I mean, that's 2 out of probably 100 different examples I could give if we had plenty of time.
So you really are going in there investigating.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And how long does this take, the process?
Generally, it's about 12 weeks from start to finish. That is probably where it depends a little bit on the client size. So if they're really small, we can usually knock it out faster. And if they're a really big company, it could take a little bit longer.
And how far back can you go? What if you've been overcharged for years?
Sure. I mean, the telecom example I just gave you, we went back about 12 years. And it was funny because when we were trying to get that refunded back for the client, the vendor was offering like a 3-month refund. And they acted like they were doing us a favor. But we were able to realize that that particular error was a tariff error. And because it was a tariff error, we were able to go back to the point of error. So we investigated further and realized that it had actually gone back 12 years. But it depends on the statute of limitations, the type of the error, et cetera.
Talking with Aaron Stahl, he's the president and CEO of P3 Cost Analyst. It's a cost reduction company. Okay, so maybe we're not going to have the skill of your company and the people that work for your company. We're not going to be forensic auditors per se, but someone that's listening that owns a business, regardless of the size, what's one thing they can do to try to find an area? Will we be able to see areas where we're overspending?
Sure. I think most people in their AP department or in their company, they know to investigate if they see something that spikes out of control and they go look into it. But most of the errors and overcharges that we find actually fall within the normal range of spend. So they are really hard to identify. I would say, just like a couple takeaways, call your telecom provider and have them send over a copy of the customer service record. And if you have somebody inside of your company that can truly understand that, because when you get it, you'll see that it reads like hieroglyphics. But if you do, if you do have somebody in your company that really truly understands that, which is very rare, but it's a possibility, then you can really drill down and see if there's any errors, overcharges, or opportunities there. And then as far as like the utility, I'd give an example of maybe just keeping an eye out and see if you have an E next to the meter reading. That means estimated meter reading. That can be a red flag. But again, this is a little bit like trying to do telemedicine with a doctor. It is, these are complex industries and they are hard to diagnose the issue.
Of course, you're saying it's better to leave this to the experts.
That's right.
So you do have franchise opportunities and people can hire you. And you say that they don't have to pay as long as, you know, it depends on what you guys find out.
Sure. Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's a completely contingency based approach. So if we're not able to help our clients save money and they don't agree to the savings that we bring forward, there is no fee. So 1 in 10 times that we go to work for our clients, we're unable to find them savings, but the other 9 out of 10 times we are.
And what's the percentage of times that you guys find something?
Yeah, I mean, it's literally 90% of the time.
Really?
Absolutely. 9 out of 10 clients that we work for, we find savings.
And this is a growing industry, this cost reduction industry.
I really think so. I mean, we close about 1 out of every 2 deals when we get in front of the decision maker. And the only reason we don't close the other 2 is because we just didn't do a good enough job explaining the need. They either think they can do it in-house. But more and more business owners are starting to realize that they need help outside of their walls, expertise outside of their walls. You see executive coaching, all those sorts of things starting to rise. So I think over time, people will realize they need a cost reduction consulting just like they need everything else.
Food for thought, especially if you're a CFO or a CEO or you're a small business owner as well. Thank you so much for being in the studio. Aaron Stahl, President and CEO of P3 Cost Analysts. And what's your website?
It's costanalyst.com.
Thank you. And analyst is plural.
That's correct. With an S.
Thank you so much, Aaron. A lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Winter's Business Lunch, G here. Thanks so much for keeping it right here on WGN Radio. I'm now joined by WGN Radio's very own Amy Guth. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how's it going today?
Fantastic. So we're going to talk a little bit of trending business stories.
As ever. So, you know, I think a little bit of a theme today, two stories that I've been watching, both are about companies giving. So the first story I've been looking at is that Uber is going to contribute $100,000 towards boosting 2020 census participation locally here in Chicago, which I think is interesting. I've been watching that with a lot of interest. The term that gets thrown around a lot is hard to count. So we're looking at hard to count segments of population, and that ranges anything from small children, elderly, people who are maybe have mobility issues and cannot, you know, maybe people that cannot access the internet, things like that. But also one group that I think is really important to talk about is people that are afraid to participate. And there can be any number of reasons why you're like maybe a little skeptical of participating. What does that mean? Especially this particular census, since there was a little bit of court proceeding about what would be on that census. I think there's a little bit of consternation there among certain groups, certain segments of the population.
Amy, can you tell us why it's so important that the census has accurate numbers?
Yes, I can. Because that has a lot to do with what funding we get on the state level. So we're talking about schools and roads and things like that that we all depend on being there. That, of course, has a lot to do with how many people are living in that state. So if you have a state with a very small population, it doesn't matter if it's a giant swath of land, small population is not going to be as funded as much as a state that's really, really, really crowded, right? So it's really important that people are counted in the census. So Uber has pledged $100,000 to local community organizations that are helping with this issue. And there's a lot of organizations that have been talking about this, especially over the last year, of trying to educate people about, hey, if someone comes knocking on the door, if you get something in the mail, it's not necessarily, don't think of it, it's a trick. It's not a trap. It's really just trying to get a head count that is accurate so that we have the funding that we need for those kind of public services.
But it can feel so initially suspicious to have anyone collecting data on you.
Well, sure. You know, and I don't know if you've ever played around with any kind of genealogy or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Census records are such an interesting source later for who was where. Where were my relatives when? When did they enter this country? What happened? Things like that, that I think are really interesting. It's also, you know, back then it was all done by hand. So you see, like, I've looked at records when my relatives first arrived, and it's like, that's phonetically probably what that name sounded like, but not even close to how you would spell it. So,
Amy, any idea why Uber is participating and donating? No, just they want to be on good terms, I guess.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think they've talked a lot about it, and they kind of feel like part of the infrastructure, and we've been having a lot of conversations about transportation and things like that. So, yeah, so there's that.
Yesterday, we were talking about coronavirus and just all the mayhem that's been happening in terms of speculation about coronavirus.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, the World Health Organization, if you go to their website, there is a almost daily update. And that's a great number to look at because, you know, there's some outlets and individuals are saying, oh, it's 600. And then there's people saying, oh, it's an underrepresented number, whatever. The World Health Organization puts out regular briefings on here's how many people we believe are infected globally, and here are deaths that we were able to confirm, things like that. Here's another number I think is really important to share regularly is when you're looking at the number of fatalities. Also, a lot of outlets, and with the help of the World Health Organization, have also been pointing out, and also here's the number of people that have been treated and released, which at present is higher than the number of people who have died.
That's good to know.
Which is really good to know, right? Because you see, you know, 370 people, and that seems, oh my gosh, that's a lot of people. But then you compare that to more than 600 that have been treated and released, and you're like, okay, that helps you put it in perspective and keep things in perspective a little more. So we're looking at around a little over 17,000 globally. But every time anybody mentions this virus to me, I'm like, please, please look at the World Health Organization, not like some .blogspot blogger who believes they know. It's really important to know the source of the information that you're looking at. But on that note of companies giving, Ken Griffin, he is local. He is, of course, the founder of Citadel. Citadel and Citadel Securities, they've decided that they are going to be giving quite a bit of money. It's $7.5 million in support. So that's going to be divided between two humanitarian aid organizations and also toward an organization that's working on developing a vaccine. And so part of that is also a supply donation that's routing through the UK. And, you know, I think that also always kind of, I mean, we need three other segments for this part, but it's really interesting with a lot of, in moments like this, I've interviewed a lot of experts around this kind of stuff, around illnesses, around things like that. A lot of times organizations misstep by donating supplies because if you believe what you know, sometimes it's like, oh, I bet they need X, but then you end up donating things that group, in fact, doesn't need. You know, the example that one expert gave me was she was working in sub-Saharan Africa in a rural hospital, and a hospital from, I think, the US or Canada donated heated maternity beds. And she was like, that's now going to cost us to get rid of them. We don't need heated maternity beds in a subtropical, you know, sub-Saharan area. So things like that. So sometimes when you see an organization, you're like, good intentions, but probably not helpful. In this case, it is helpful. They are donating some supplies that are in fact in short supply. And one issue that came up with some of the supply, you know, some of the breakdowns in supply is that some factories had closed or made plans to close ahead of the Lunar New Year holiday. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things like masks and suits and things like that that are in a little bit short supply. So via the UK, Citadel is making sure there's a donation there. So, you know, there's a lot of bad news in the world, but sometimes there's, you know, good news. There's people stepping up and trying to help.
And it's interesting, too, that they said that it was also a personal decision to tackle the coronavirus because they felt they had so many colleagues affected by the situation.
Yeah, in a statement, Ken Griffin said, "Our hearts go out to all impacted by this situation, particularly those in China, which is the native country of many of our colleagues." Not that you necessarily need a personal connection to something in order to support, to lend support in times of need, but he felt like it was personal for many of his workers, and so he decided to, that's the way they're going to go.
Well, thank you so much to our very own Amy Guth from WGN Radio.
Thanks.
A lot more coming up. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.